Coming up on Tech News Today, is Samsung in trouble? Should Dell get into wearable computing? Does Vine need a cat category? Will Android ever be flawless? Those answers and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, July 5th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be used, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakta.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And Tom Merritt has the day off. I believe he's up with Scott Johnson and friends at Nerdtacular.
Are they nerding it up, you think?
I think they probably
nerding
are.
Nerding it down.
Well, it's the elevation, so let's just go
so
with
yeah,
up.
Up.
Yeah, right. Although anyway, that's a story for another time. Happy Friday, everybody. Let's start off with the top 10 stories of the day in the news views.
That didn't work. Here we go.
Let's try again.
Samsung has missed already quite low expectations for its quarterly earnings guidance on Friday today, leading some to believe that the smartphone business might be on the decline as the growth in sales of the popular Galaxy phones begins to slow and competitors are continuing to emerge, taking away market share. The Galaxy S running Android pushed Samsung into the top rank of smartphone makers back in 2012, overtaking Apple, whose iPhone had set the industry standard 5 years earlier.
We might have another contender in the smartwatch world. Would you guess it's actually Dell? Dell's global VP of personal computing, Sam Bird, told The Guardian that the company is exploring the wearable computing space. He says he doesn't see any magic form factors like the iPad coming around, but the future is in multiple computing devices per person.
HTC has just announced its unaudited results for the second quarter, 2013, and they are pretty hideous. Despite launching the flagship smartphone HTC One, the company made just $41 million after taxes from $2.35 billion revenue. Well, do those numbers not seem so bad? If you compare them to HTC's same quarter last year, where the company took in revenue of $3 billion and made $246 million in profit, it's quite a drop.
Not so good. On Thursday, the European Parliament voted to conduct a full inquiry related to PRISM. It will look into PRISM's impact on EU citizens and their right to privacy and data protection. The European Parliament will also issue warnings to Germany, the Netherlands, Poland, Sweden, and the UK for having similar surveillance programs. The EP is also asking the European Commission to consider suspending data sharing agreements with the United States.
Security researchers believe that they've found a major security flaw in Google's Android OS, which could affect up to 99% of Android phones that are now in consumers' hands. Blue Box Security, a research firm, explains that the flaw is a weakness in the way that Android apps verify changes to their code. The weakness could allow hackers to turn any legitimate application into a malicious Trojan without flagging attention of Google's App Store or by a mobile phone or even by the person using the app.
Sarah, you're a Vine hater. You're going to like this story. Mm. Video app Vine just got an upgrade. First up, you'll be able to share videos by revining. I'm not even making that up as a term. It's like retweeting because these are the guys behind Twitter. This update also brings private posts that let you control who sees your videos. The camera is now more useful with a grid, focus, and a ghost mode. So if you want to do stop motion, it makes it a little easier. Vine also has 15 channels in the Explorer section, including music, comedy, and cat channels.
Cat, like meow cats?
Yes, cats.
Oh.
So maybe now you'll be able to click that. You can find that on Vine to revine when you want to.
Revine some cat vines.
There you go.
You heard it here. EU lawmakers have agreed to raise criminal penalties across the European Union for cyber attacks, particularly those that harm critical national infrastructure and hijacking computers to steal data, sensitive data. The decision mandates national maximum sentences of at least 2 years in prison for attempting to illegally access information systems. The maximum penalty for attacks against infrastructure such as power plants, transport, government networks will be set at 5 years or more, higher than the current tariff in most member states.
Quickie, the company behind a mobile app that lets you create videos, is being sued by app development company Chaotic Moon. Chaotic Moon claims it was not paid for its services to help and develop Quickie's iOS app. Quickie has filed a counterclaim that alleges Chaotic Moon engaged in fraud and that Quickie suffered $250,000 worth of damages in the process. Quickie was just purchased by Yahoo the other day to the tune of $50 million.
I wonder if this is all just going to get taken care of.
They'll just buy everybody.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah.
A new report from Pew Research comparing different social networks shows that Reddit, of course, the front page of the internet, that's what Reddit calls itself, where users can obviously post and discuss and promote links to other sites and GIFs and other stuff, is now seeing visits from 6% of all adults in the United States, with, not very surprisingly, 18 to 29 year-old males being the biggest users of all at 15%.
I'm sorry, I was on Reddit. Let's check in with Google's ongoing issues with its privacy policy and the EU. The UK's Information Commissioner's Office has given Google until the 20th of September to amend its privacy policy to make it more informative for individual service users. The ICO says that the updated policy does not provide sufficient information to enable UK users of Google services to understand how their data will be used across all of the company's products.
This episode of Tech News Today is sponsored by ProXPN, a global virtual private network that works with almost any internet connection. You want your privacy to be secure, right? Well, governments and ISPs, they want to control what you can and cannot see. They want to keep a record of what you're doing. That whole free Wi-Fi thing, you know, when you're at the airport or at your favorite coffee house, that's putting you at risk because your passwords and your data can be intercepted, not with all that much effort if you're during kitchen. Any online application can work with ProXPN. That's why ProXPN is so great, like your web browser, email, file sharing, and instant messaging programs. ProXPN helps keep everything you do online hidden from people you don't want to see, disguising your physical location from people you don't want to know where you are, and keeping you safe to access any website, any online service, no matter where you live, no matter where you're traveling. ProXPN has complete online privacy through a 512-bit encryption tunnel, works with OpenVPN or PPTP. You can bypass internet filtering and blocked websites. You can bypass geographical restrictions for internet content. They've got world-class customer support if you ever run into issues or you have some questions for folks. ProXPN software for Windows and Mac offers advanced controls, allowing you to select the programs, the ports you want to route through anonymously through ProXPN servers. Steve Gibson, of course, of Security Now here on the Twit Network, gave it a great review. And I mean, if Steve Gibson likes it, it's good enough for us. If you're interested, go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. Premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for a year, but we've got an offer. Use the offer code TNT and you'll receive 20% off the lifetime of your account, which turns into less than $5 per month on the yearly plan. If you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. You got nothing to lose here. Go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. And we thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to talk about the important stories of the day and even the week is Harry McCracken, editor-at-large for Time.com and Technologizer. Hello, Harry.
Hey there. Great to see you guys again.
Well, great to have you back. And of course, which is this is becoming a Friday regular thing, we've got Len Peralta, internet cartoonist, lenperalta.com, and he's going to be drawing some stuff for us today.
I am. Even though I'm going to be working through the July 4th malaise here.
So, Len, you're still not going to be doing interpretive dances of the stories. Still drawings?
Well, it's funny you should say. No, yes.
All right, it's a big plan for today.
Let's not get too ambitious, everyone. Right. It was a long 4th of July. Let's start off with the kind of mixed reports on the future of Samsung.
Yeah, very odd. So Samsung released a guidance for its latest financial quarter, which missed quarterly expectations by 6%. Now, Samsung had another record quarter, made $8.3 billion in operating profit, which is up 47% from a year ago. It's expected to report higher earnings in the current and fourth quarters as sales of the S4 pick up. The full quarterly results won't be out till July 26th. Now, Notice, they missed expectations but have another record and tons of profit. It's also raising concerns that the smartphone business may have peaked. For Samsung, they're saying that the S4 has seen disappointing sales, which is strange because Samsung's head has said they've sold 20 million of these devices and it's doing quite well. Jeff Kim, an analyst at Hyundai Securities, says that Samsung may be too dependent on its mobile business, as 70% of their total operating profits come from mobile. Samsung spent more money in the quarter on marketing than R&D for the first time in 3 years. And we all remember the S4's launch with that Radio City Music Hall bonanza, mm-hmm. showing off skits for the S4. Harry, Samsung's shipping millions of phones, making money hand over fist, but investors aren't happy with them. What's going on here?
Well, it's always all about expectations. I mean, basically, everybody else in the phone business, except for Apple, would gladly trade whatever problems they have for Samsung's problems. But Samsung has done so well lately that investors have set the bar really high. I do think it shows that the folks who kind of declared that the war between Samsung and Apple was over and Samsung won, we're jumping the gun. It's very cyclical, and the better you do, the tougher it gets to keep on doing as well as investors want you to do.
So if investors wanted more, like wanted 6% more, if Samsung doesn't throw this money into marketing this, they probably could have made expectations. It just so happens that Samsung is throwing more money into marketing than we've ever seen. Is that a really big deal these days?
Well, I mean, I think that event that you pointed to at Radio City Music Hall did not go over that well to a lot of people. It was strange.
That's an understatement.
There's like dancing ladies, and you know, it's like maybe a little bit too much money was put into an event like that. But Samsung has had a lot of success with advertisements, commercials where, you know, it's showing people saying Apple's a little long in the tooth, Apple's for your parents, Samsung is pretty cool. I mean, I think that by and large has been really effective for Samsung. Not that they don't also have good stuff to sell. But at what point do you sort of say, okay, well, we've arrived. We're Samsung. People consider us, you know, the top echelon of non-Apple options that we have. We can dial back on the marketing now because our reputation is already set. I don't know if Samsung can do that yet.
Harry, what do you make of the diversification argument? Samsung's making a ton of money with smartphones, and just comparing them to Apple back and forth, it's like, oh yeah, they also make washers and dryers and televisions, and they make vacuum cleaners. They make a ton of products. Is Samsung too dependent on their phones?
That is fascinating to hear. Before I saw those numbers, I would not have guessed that the phones were responsible for that much of the profit, given how unbelievably diverse a company Samsung is and how different it is from Apple, which, you know, has this mantra that we're not going to make hundreds of products. We'll just make a handful.
Also, are you actually guessing that maybe Samsung might dial it back a little bit? Well, you think that because if we hit a saturation point, will they go, okay, wait a second. We tried 800 models. Now everybody's got a phone. We're going to cut down to 4.
And it's also interesting to hear that they're doing so well with profit, because there was a story last week which said that Samsung subsidizes its phones more heavily than other companies do. And so, all things being equal, Samsung phones are often a little cheaper on a plan than other phones are. And they just do an unbelievable amount of marketing. If you walk around San Francisco, it sometimes feels like the entire city is sponsored by Samsung. There's so many ads. And despite spending all that money, you know, that is still their profit center, smartphones.
I don't think Samsung really has anything to worry about. It's like they're still making profits. They're not HTC. They're not freaking out. They shouldn't be panicked at all. This is not BlackBerry. They're on the way up. They probably maybe have peaked because of the crazy success they had. But I don't think they're going anywhere.
Well, and it's also, you know, you joked that they had 800 models out there. It's like they can cut back on some of the stuff that just isn't sticking.
798 models. You're right.
And that will that'll help their bottom line. Samsung, I see good things for you. All right, let's move on to some not very good things, actually, unless you're Samsung, because they've apparently fixed this problem. But as we mentioned in the news views, in results published by Blue Box Security, a research firm, whose technology officer, Jeff Forrestal, their chief technology officer, says there's a flaw in Android that lets hackers get a master key into Android, and it affects pretty much all Android phones, although some manufacturers, Samsung being one of them, for the Galaxy S4, have already fixed the problem. So here's the deal. The security verification process that's used on Google Play ever since the release of Android 1.6 has an issue and can leave up to 900 million devices open to hackers. It's a weakness in the way that Android apps verify when changes are made to the code of an app. So a hacker can turn a legitimate application into something illegitimate, malicious, and it won't be detected by Google's App Store. There won't be some sort of flag saying, well, wait a second, something's going on here, and not by your cell phone's hardware as well. So if I'm breaking into IaaS's app, I would have access to all the data that that app collects. And if an app made by a device manufacturer gets exploited, then potentially I could take over all functioning of the phone in general. Now, Google declined to comment to the Washington Post for this story. And again, Forrestal says some manufacturers have already patched this issue. Except apparently this is something that was reported to Google back in February. If that's the case, what's the problem here? If Google doesn't want to talk about it, we're getting into one of those situations where it's like, well, how much time do we need before we fix a potentially really, really malicious issue that affects so many Android users? Harry, what do you make of stories like this? Is it just one of these things where Android is, because of the open nature of Android, we're always going to see flaws like this, they'll get patched eventually, and there's not that much to worry about? Or is this inherently an issue for Android?
Well, there are basically two kinds of security problems, ones which theoretically might cause problems for millions of people, and ones which actually are causing problems that real people can see. And so far, this one seems theoretical. I haven't seen any news that hackers are using this. But you're right, it does point out one of the basic challenges of Android, which that nobody, including Google, can just roll out a security patch. It's not even like, for instance, how it is with Windows, where Microsoft is able to, you know, release a patch. And if you're using auto updates, you'll get it very quickly. And if Apple has issues like this, they can also solve them in a jiffy, or at least roll them out to everybody. And this is not possible with Android. It is a relief to hear that some of the companies who make Android devices have fixed it already.
Yeah, and just a little bit of clarification from what I understand about this is that if you keep the function known as unknown sources deselected, I believe it's deselected, which basically means, no, I will not install anything on my device that isn't verified from the Play Store specifically. So in other words, if you're only getting your apps through the Play Store, you're probably okay.
That is the default setting.
What's that? Yeah, exactly. That is the default setting. Absolutely.
And if you do turn it off, you're always at a little bit more risk.
Yeah.
Install something dangerous.
Where that becomes a challenge or an issue are stores like the Amazon App Store. They operate within the requirement that you check that box off, right? So if you check that box and you're downloading your apps through Amazon and then you happen to go to another, you know, type of market outside of those places and you end up getting this weird app as a result of that, the requirement of Amazon keeping that checked ends up being your kind of, you know, their kind of straight line into the weakness on the device. So I don't know. That I think right there is actually a challenge for third-party markets.
And there's the issue that Android is on every single, like on tons of devices, and Google does not have the control over it like Microsoft does with Windows Phone or Apple does with iOS. They can't push these updates out. The fact that Samsung can actually get the S4 running properly, that's very important because that's a very popular phone. I guess it's up to these device manufacturers to go into it. Google, if they got this information, probably passed it on to the top partners, probably the Nexus companies and Samsung, to say, hey, by the way, this could be an issue. Because how did Samsung get this information? They must have gotten it somewhere. Mm-hmm. So it's just the hugeness of Android. It's like a PC at this point. The fact that there are flaws in it that are like 0 day or that kind of thing, or actually 1.6, not 0 day. The fact that there are flaws, that's just standard operating procedure with operating systems.
And I guess as Harry mentions, if it can still kind of be classified as a theoretical problem, and we don't have a lot of instances of terrible things happening, a company like Google, yeah, could maybe spread the word. Hey, device manufacturers, this might be something that you want to address, and or people running their own versions of Android, and we don't really have to panic yet because it's just a theoretical problem.
I can't wait to panic when it's real.
Yeah, everybody. Yeah.
Save your panic for when it's real.
Fine. Let's just talk about wearable computing then, because we can't really get away from that. It's the future.
It's the future, says Sam Bird, Dell's global VP of personal computing. He says he talked to The Guardian. There's some quotes here. There are challenges in cost and how to make it a really good experience. But the piece that's interesting is that computers are getting smaller. Having a watch on your wrist, that's pretty interesting, pretty appealing, said Bird. Dell's PC revenue is not doing so great. They shrank by 9% in the last 3 months compared to the year before. They've been pushed to the third top PC maker behind Lenovo and HP. And Bird even mentioned that Dell's tablets, the XPS 10, which runs Windows RT, and the Latitude 10, which runs Windows 8, have sold in the hundreds of thousands. So it's not exactly setting any records by any means. And businesses are slow to adopt a new operating system like Windows 8. Harry, do watches seem to make a lot of sense for Dell? They tried tablets. They tried some Linux things. They've tried smartphones, PDAs. Now they're like, yeah, watches. We'll get on watches. Does that sound like something that Dell could actually do properly?
Yeah, I mean, Dell has this very long track record of trying to get into businesses other than PCs. They also did HGTVs for a while, and they always come in and then get out pretty quickly. I think that, one of the challenges is Dell is very good at making, reasonably priced commodity hardware, running somebody else's software. And all these new categories, such as MP3 players and PDAs and phones and tablets, you have to have really tight integration, and you can't just slap somebody else's software on. And that's been a challenge for Dell. And we're so early in smartphones yet, we don't really know what a smartphone will be like. But it's hard to imagine it won't be another category where the integration between the hardware, the software, and the service is really important. And it's a real challenge to differentiate yourself from everybody else. So, well, I like the fact that Dell is eager to try new things. It's also, I immediately thought of all these other categories that they tried and were not successful at.
Wow, HGTVs. I had forgotten about that.
Me too.
It completely.
Yeah, there was a period where everybody did that. Gateway did them. HP did them.
This feels like a Groundhog Day version of a story that we talked about the other day. Was that HP?
And smartphones.
And smartphones.
Yeah, they're coming back with
smartphones. It's like the same story. HP saying, let's do smartphones. That's a big deal. People love smartphones. PC market's declining. Now Dell's like, what's the new cool thing? Wearable computing. We'd like to get into that market. I mean, it's not to say that Dell has no chance here. It seems like what are you laughing at?
I will say Dell has no chance.
No chance?
No.
Zero chance?
No. Have you seen? They couldn't do tablets right. They couldn't do phones right. They're going to get the watch right. Apple's having trouble doing the watch. That's why it's not even out. Like, we've seen smartwatches, and we've seen this trend a long time ago. If Dell made spot watches, I would believe that, because that failed. If they want to be in the market that they're going to be your Android companion device, that's a joke. Dell can't put this together. They hardly know what they're doing with Alienware, let alone making something that you wear.
Well, so Dell is just totally screwed then, is what you're saying. I mean, if PCs is the only thing that they can do, well, that's...
Yes.
I mean, your days are numbered.
Oh, yes. I'm totally saying that. That's when they go
Dell
private.
And Co.
When they go private, it'll be easier to do these crazier moves, because stockholders would be like, what are you doing? You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Dell.
Dell is also good. Dell is really good at services and business services, so... That seems a riper opportunity for them than making consumer electronics gadgets.
All right, let's talk about something that's on the rise, at least in the U.S., and that's Reddit. As I mentioned in the news views, 6% of all adults in the U.S. are on Reddit. And, of course, that elusive 18 to 29-year-old male category that's so hard to capture for television networks are the biggest users of all, 15% of those, of the 6% of adults on Reddit are males in that category. Men are twice as likely as women to be Reddit users. Not a huge surprise there. Consumers under the age of 50 are significantly more likely to use Reddit than those over 50. Okay, that sounds fine. The site, though, this was kind of interesting to me. Interesting, is much more common apparently among urban and suburbanites than people who live in rural communities. The Pew Research Report, which, by the way, polled, I think, about 2,000 people in phone interviews between April 17th and May 19th, landline and cell phones, and conducted the surveys both in English and Spanish, said that 67% of consumers said that they use Facebook. Twitter was second. 16% of all consumers said that they use that. This is regularly, on a regular basis, followed by Pinterest at 15%. Then Instagram, of course, owned by Facebook, at 13%. Reddit and Tumblr were about on par at 6%. Now, you might say, well, geez, I mean, Reddit's way behind. But I've always thought of Reddit, even though we're all familiar with Reddit. We have a subreddit for Tech News Today. Reddit is something that I use in my daily life. It's a very geeky part of the internet. I'm actually sort of surprised that Tumblr and Reddit would pull about the same as far as adult percentages of users. What do you think?
It seems, I think Reddit's a little bit more mainstream than that. I would think something like 4chan is the geeky, freaky side.
I suppose so.
Right? Like you have these niches. And when it comes to Reddit, it's got some broad appeal. I remember the reason why I found Reddit was I used to use Dig a lot, and it changed so much. I'm like, I need something else that does something similar. And Reddit had tons and tons of subreddits that got me lost. Then you get those silly things like the Reddit Enhancement Suite, where you can do like endless scrolling and look at pictures all day of cats. Before you know it, you wasted half an hour. So it doesn't surprise me that people are on Reddit, because there's just so many things that you can view here from different points of view. Although reading about the fact that it's not really rural, I think that's reflected on Reddit. You don't see a lot of farm pictures on Reddit unless it's like making fun of one.
I suppose. I guess once President Obama doesn't ask me anything on Reddit, I guess it's not a secret anymore, right? It's about as mainstream as you could get. I still, at the same time, always thought that Reddit was sort of a curious choice for some of this stuff to flourish, because it really is, in a way, still a bare bones Dig alternative that ended up amassing a super big community and is very popular, but still kind of has that old school feel, at least to me. Harry, am I crazy? Does any of this surprise you?
Not at all. I mean, and I think that Reddit has not really tried to go super mainstream. You mentioned Tumblr. I assume that now that Tumblr is part of Yahoo, it will try to become something that lots more folks use, including older folks and rural folks. But Reddit seems to be kind of happy to be Reddit. I do think it actually has more influence on the web than you can measure in numbers, because so many of the other people who blog and share stuff elsewhere learned about it on Reddit first. So even people who don't actually ever touch Reddit, you know, eventually see stories that became popular because they were there.
Yeah, I think it's, although Facebook is wildly in first place among these consumers, with 67% of them saying, yeah, we go to Facebook regularly. Twitter being at 16%, Pinterest at 15%. I mean, Pinterest almost eclipsing Twitter as far as adults using social networks.
I find that confusing.
I find that very confusing.
I guess people like to pin things much. It's much easier to hit a bookmarklet, I would imagine, than to actually try to compose something in 140 characters, unless you're going to share something you pinned, or you would tweet about something you saw on Reddit, or I don't know how this ends up on itself.
Yeah. Well, good work, Reddit. 6% and strong and counting. All right. What about 3D, the 3D TV revolution? Can we put it to bed yet?
Hopefully. Okay, so BBC head of 3D, Kim Chillinglaw, says the BBC is going to take a 3-year break from developing 3D programming.
We're just on a break.
They're on a break. Yeah, it's not over. They're not going to develop 3D programming for 3 years at the end of this year. The BBC aired several programs in 3D, like the Olympics and Walking with Dinosaurs and like a Queen's speech. Not the King's speech of the movie, but the actual Queen. An estimated 1.5 million UK households own a 3D TV, and the BBC's coverage of the Olympics opening ceremony was watched by less than half. Mm-hmm. Chillinglaw tells RadioTimes.com that the experience of 3D TV is a hassle. Quote, I think when people watch TV, they concentrate in a different way. When people go into the cinema, they go and are used to doing one thing. I think that's one of the reasons that the take-up of 3D TV has been disappointing. And one of the final broadcasts in 3D will be a 3D Doctor Who anniversary episode this November. Harry, is 3D, like, in the home dead now?
Well, I'm kind of relieved to see it doing badly, because I've always disliked it, and it seems like everybody else agrees with me. ESPN just recently said they're shutting down their 3D channel. I do think there is one slight possibility of it coming back, and that is glasses-free 3D technology. Dolby has a 3D technology that needs no glasses and is surprisingly good. It's not available on any sets yet, but it might be available next year. And, you know, that could be a game changer, because the glasses are expensive and a hassle and a major barrier.
It seems like saying something is going to just go dormant for a few years. a three-year break, that's a really long break. I mean, this is, I guess it's probably the BBC knowing that right now 3D is not where it's at, not enough people are interested. And it's a very interesting point that Schillinglaw makes, that when you're at the movie theater and you're watching a 3D movie, I mean, we've all been trained, like, don't look at your phone, don't talk to your neighbor, you sit there and you watch the movie, otherwise you're being rude and might be asked to leave by an usher. At home, we're doing all sorts of stuff while we're watching TV. I mean, maybe if you're, you know, riveted and you're watching the Super Bowl, you're not doing anything else but looking at your TV, but it's hard to ask people to enjoy this 3D experience and don't do anything else, which we've all been accustomed to doing for a while.
The thing that jumped over 3D is the second screen, because if you have these 3D glasses and you look down and everything looks dark because you have these polarized glasses, you take them off and then everything's blurry on your first screen. It just doesn't work really that way, because we're getting so used to having this other device to mess with. You don't want to be told, sit down, put these glasses on, and stare at that box for an hour. Once you tell somebody to do that, they are going to find everything else to distract them, whether it's like, there's some dust in the corner I need to attend to. It is something strange about trying to modify the behavior of people when it comes to television. It's just that times have changed. I think this could have been really big pre-internet. You know, like before we had all these other little devices, pre-wireless, maybe you would sit in front of a television and go, ooh, look at this. This is amazing. It's like the radio.
But it still is. That's the thing, though. It's like, I think most people, when they see 3D done well, let's say you're watching an Olympic game, go, ooh, this is amazing. It's just so hard to integrate that into a home experience that it's over before it begins. BBC might be saying, let's shelf this for 3 years, and who knows how great 3D might be in a few years. We could bring it back. It's probably why they don't want to make it seem like, oh, this was just a failure, we're never going to do this again. But also, you know, in 3 years, there's quite a bit of time.
I think Harry's onto something. Once 3D goes without glasses, it makes it a lot easier for people just to, you know, look up and look at 3D. Harry, do you think it's going to go beyond any other gimmick, or we're just going to see, like, manufacturers say, all right, we're not going to even develop the glasses list. We're going to go 4K, 8K, and higher resolutions.
Well, a few years ago, Sony in particular was super aggressive about the idea that 3D was the future. And these days, if you ask Sony about the future of TV, they talk about 4K, and they mention 3D in passing, if at all. So I think the industry has kind of decided it didn't turn out to be something so compelling that a consumer who had bought an expensive flat panel TV a couple of years ago was willing to go out all over again and buy it. And 4K has its challenges too, because you need 4K content, which is just starting to roll out. But I think ultimately it has a lot more potential.
Yeah. Better quality rather than that whole gimmick thing. All right, let's finish up with an interesting story in the LA Times about how expensive it is to buy an iPhone in Brazil, which is one of the world's largest economies. Brazil has a population of 193.9 million people. About 40 million of those people have come out of what would be considered poverty into more of a middle class that makes up more than half the population. Basically, emerging market. There's a lot of people with money. They want electronics. Why isn't the iPhone more popular in Brazil? The idea here is that Brazil has really stiff import taxes. So if you want to buy an iPhone, let's say, they're priced really expensively in Brazil. And so they're out of reach of a lot of Brazilian consumers, even ones that have enough money to spend on a smartphone. Now, Apple could build iPhones in Brazil and avoid these tariffs, these ridiculous taxes, but that hasn't really panned out yet. Although Foxconn, you might remember, we talked about this last year, has opened a plant outside of Sao Paulo. There's even a street called Avenida Steve Jobs. So some sources who have access to this plant say, oh, yeah, they're making iPhones and iPads there. But it's rather secretive. It's not really some sort of official, here's where we are manufacturing devices that are going to the Brazilian population. And prices aren't coming down because of that. So what do we think's going on here? I mean, is this, we've heard about low-cost iPhones. Is Brazil the place where this makes the most sense for something like this? Because the iPhones are already ridiculously overpriced at twice as much, I think, as what you might get an iPhone for in the U.S. are a couple of reports that I've seen. Harry, does Apple need to make it in Brazil in order to be on a level playing field? I mean, there are a lot of potential customers there.
Yeah, I mean, it's already an incredibly important economy, and it's only getting more so as you do have more of those middle-class folks who want consumer electronics. So I don't know anything more about what they're actually up to than anybody else, but the notion that Apple would like to be able to sell phones to people in Brazil at a reasonable price is perfectly logical.
You know, what's interesting is although Brazil is such a large economy and a rising one, there's not one single Apple retail store in all of Brazil. Apple has said, we'll open one. Of course, the World Cup is happening there next year. You've got the Olympics there in 2016. I mean, I guess Apple has a couple years, but that really surprises me. I mean, in Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo, huge, huge cities, big cosmopolitan, metropolitan cities, not one Apple retail store.
That is a bit surprising. Yeah. Apple is gunning for a lot of the newer markets where they can make a dent in China, India, Brazil. They want to get, they have to come out with a device that meets a competitive price because these other, like I was saying before, Android phones are everywhere. They're getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. They have almost as much power. So the idea, if you're going to get an Apple device, it's a status symbol, it costs a lot of money. That's not what Apple necessarily even wants. They like having that great premium brand, but they definitely want to have as many users as possible because they want to collect data, or they want to sell products, or they want to sell services. Once they get their devices in people's hands, that'll be much better. This kind of thing, seeing this kind of report, does definitely back up the idea of the cheaper iPhone. That thing, that rumor has been around for a while that we're expecting in September, a plastic-based iPhone that will cost less, supposed to be easier to manufacture than the other iPhone. So maybe if that changes things in Brazil, maybe it'd be easier to make these phones, not have to import them, and just say, hey, they're around the corner at the local Apple store once they open one of those.
Yeah, I mean, Apple has less than 10% of the market in Brazil, and that's the same story in other emerging markets as well. So I think probably collectively, Tim Cook and company say, I mean, we've got potentially such huge markets that we're not infiltrating enough with these superior, wonderful, beautiful, expensive products that we now make. And we have to think differently. I didn't even mean to say that just now, but that's what happened.
It was just implanted in your brain like a worm in an apple, right?
Yeah, it just kind of happened.
You mean think different.
So. Right, yes, exactly. Thank you, Jason. Branding is very important, as Samsung knows. All right, let's move on to the randomizer. So, as you found the story this morning, the Xbox might not have been called the Xbox after all.
Yeah, EdgeOnline.com has a list of rejected names for Microsoft's first console, and they are just hilarious. Some of them, like, there's FACE, which stands for Full Action Center. There's MIND, Microsoft Interactive Network Device. Where's my favorite one? The Microsoft Interactive Center. So not the PlayStation, but the Interactive Center, which I thought was such a horrible play. Now, it was called the Direct Xbox, and it got shortened to Xbox in the email. So that's actually why it got its name. But these names are ridiculous, although we did think that iPad was a silly name. Xbox sounds a little silly. Harry, did you take a look at this list? Do any of these names sound like a better name for the Xbox than the Xbox?
I mean, some of them sound like names that for other things Microsoft did actually use, since they kind of have a history of having names with too many words and too many unnecessary terms. I think Xbox actually is a pretty darn good name, and it's not surprising it's been around for a while, and you've seen Microsoft start to apply it to other things like its music service. It really is sort of Microsoft's consumer entertainment brand, and it's already going way beyond gaming.
Microsoft's consumer electronics brand, that could be a bit of a different name. Windows Entertainment Project was actually one of the code names that was still floating around. Midway, because it's midway between a PC and a console, and then Direct Xbox. But these names are just ridiculous.
Odyssey of the Mind? Can you imagine if it was called the OM?
I like the R&R.
Odyssey of the Mind.
Reality and Revolution.
Let's game.
Virtual Play System.
I feel a little bit bad because... So in our line of work, every once in a while, I would say several times a year, I end up in a conference room brainstorming podcast names with my coworkers. And it's one of those things where it's like, no idea is a bad idea. Let's put it all up on the whiteboard. Right. And we try to figure out what ends up sticking. Let's just get it out there. I feel like we're looking at some internal whiteboard of some really terrible Xbox names that didn't end up happening, and now we get to chuckle.
But one
about
of them
it.
Did happen, TSO, which stood for 360. So we did have an Xbox 360 in concept back with the original Xbox. The TSO, why the O is for zero, is kind of wrong, but still, it did come true.
Well, thank goodness they didn't name it that, because they would have had to explain over and over. It says zero. Get it? 360. It's O. Yeah. It's a zero. Get it? All right, let's see what's on the calendar. Ayaz, you want to take the calendar? I don't know.
It's one of those crazy calendar. Days. I got it right here.
Okay.
All right.
Don't take it away. Just leave it.
Oh, you want me to tell them what's on it? Oh, share it.
Share
it. Good idea.
Share your calendar.
Microsoft's Worldwide Partner Conference kicks off on Sunday, July 7th, and runs through the 11th. Also, on Sunday, the Pebble smartwatch is coming to Best Buy for $150. If there's not enough going on Sunday, there's one more thing. Samsung's Galaxy Tabs are coming to the U.S. on Sunday, so you can grab a Tab 10.1 or an 8.0 or 7.0 all on July 7th. And on Wednesday, July 10th, say goodbye to the Boxy Cloud DVR because Samsung just bought Boxy, and they're killing the service on the 10th, which is Wednesday. Also, Liz's birthday is on Sunday, so happy birthday, Liz.
Oh, happy birthday, Liz. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
How about you take the message?
All right. We got an email from Anthony who says, during the most previous episode, you were all talking about the whole design your own Motorola phone ad. You all seemed to think that the ad was talking about hardware. I always thought it meant software. The current Motorola commercials talk about Google Now. So continuing with that theme, I thought that there would be new software features in the unreleased Keyline Pi Android update. I hope I'm right, because few people will go and create a phone when they could go inside a store to buy an already popular phone. And I'm not one of them. Now, ABC News' Joanna Stern apparently found out that this Moto X should allow users to customize the look of the device with different colors and engraving, which you guys called that. I thought that sounded outlandishly silly, but apparently not.
Right after we talked about the story, Joanna Stern broke the rest of the story, explained what specifics are coming to the Moto X. They're designed by you. Harry, are you impressed by what Moto X is going to do for designing the phone by you?
You know, my expectations for Motorola have been so low for so long that I'm excited to see them do anything different. And at least they're trying new stuff. It's totally true that most people want to go into a store and just buy something off the shelf. But for better or worse, we'll see if there's a market for something a little more custom.
All right. Well, you know, we mentioned that Len Peralta was our fabulous cartoonist at the beginning of the show. And those of you who watched the video version of this podcast have seen his great illustrations throughout the show. But Len, why don't we go through your cartoons from the stories that we covered?
Sure thing. And, you know, I do have to say it's a July 4th malaise. So, you know, not to make any excuses, but we'll see what happens. The first story with Samsung, I held for the first time, and I'm an iPhone person, so I held the Samsung Galaxy for the first time. So I tried to draw a huge phone, and there's all this money going around. I said, what do I got to do here? You know, Samsung is having all kinds of problems, and you know, but they're still rolling in dough. So what are you going to do? The little Android guy. They're a little, you know, trying to do a little Hamburglar dude again, once again. Hacker trying to hack into the Android phone. That's always a good. And, you know, and of course, all crooks, all hackers wear the standard black and white striped shirt there. Tron guy, wearable computers, of course. I have to draw Tron guy.
Yeah. That's Dell's audience right there.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're going to look like in about 3 weeks. That's all of us. Facebook and Reddit, Facebook being the big brother here, trying to fight it out between Reddit and Tumblr. You know, I kind of agree with 3D technology. I don't understand, you know, I don't understand the three-year hiatus, but it seems like everybody else is sort of feeling the same sort of way about 3D technology on their televisions. It's kind of, not a big deal. And then finally, Apple in Brazil. You know, if you guys ever played Street Fighter, you might know that Blanca is from Brazil, and Blanca is holding the. He said Blanca is saying Blanca no has iPhone. Blanca has a sad.
I saw that when you were drawing, and I tried not to laugh into the microphone.
Oh, that's hysterical.
I saw Blanca. Otherwise known as Jimmy, right? That's his name, real name.
I think so. Yeah, Jimmy.
These are great. You know, I'd never played Blanca in Street Fighter. That was the character I could win the least with.
Yeah, the electricity. You just button mash. Yeah.
And, well, he did the flips simple. Too. Well, it didn't, for whatever reason, not simple enough.
Not complex.
Len, as always, it's so fun to have you. It's been fun to have you as a regular on Fridays. LenPeralta.com is where people can find out more about your work, of course. And thanks also to Harry McCracken, editor-at-large for Time.com, Technologizer. This was really fun, Harry. Tell people what's new with you and where they can find your work online.
Well, if you go to technologizer.com, you'll land inside time.com. You'll see all my stuff. Or you can just go to the time.com homepage or techland.com to see my stuff plus all the other technology stories we have.
Excellent. Well, so good having you on Friday, and thanks for coming on a day that many have off, but not us here on Tech News Today. And thanks also to everybody in our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com is where, if you haven't been there before, you can help vote up stories that you want us to cover. You could submit stories there as well. It's a nice active community. It was, in fact, let's see, what's, yeah, we talked about
16,835
readers. How about that? Yeah, and the number one story was everybody wanted to talk about 3D, and indeed we did. So we do check that every day. So thanks everybody who helps us pick our stories for the show. And also wanted to remind you, if you see something in one of our shows that you think is worthy of a best of clip, make sure to submit it to twit.tv/best of. We're collecting best of submissions throughout the year for end of the year best of shows. And it's really helpful to get your ideas as well. I hope everybody has a great weekend. On Monday, we're going to have Nicole Lee, Twit alum. In the meantime, you can write us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW, and we'll see you on Monday.